Hello, teens on the internet. You're listening to Jeff from Snack Point Charlie on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM, home of the hits.
Brooklyn Vegan runs down the lineup for the 2023 edition of 24-Hour Drone, set for May 27th through 28th at Basilica Hudson in Hudson. The annual event has been on hold in person since 2019 because of the COVID-19 pandemic. This year, the show is back in person with Yuka C. Honda of Cybone Matto, Wolf Eyes, Liturgy, Sarah Hines, Laura Ortman, and others performing at the event, which each year is webcast at WGXC.org and broadcast on 90.7 FM. The Basilica Hudson website has all the details about the 24-hour drone show May 27th and 28th at Basilica Hudson and will air on WGXC.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Christina Bonesack of Germantown, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowan Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Wednesday, May 17th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. The Times Union has stories of fire and ice locally. H. Rose Schneider reports that the National Weather Service has issued a freeze watch through May 18th. They warn that the below-freezing temperatures could kill plants and freeze outdoor pipes. While overnight lows are normally around 50 degrees this time of year, a high-pressure system from Canada is bringing cold, dry air that could drop below 32 degrees at night, especially at higher elevations. Mike Goodwin reports that there is also a high risk for wildfires across much of New York, according to the State Department of Environmental Conservation. A DEC alert published May 16th said, quote, high-intensity burning may develop on slopes or in concentrations of fine fuels. Fires may become serious and their control difficult unless they are attacked successfully while small, unquote. Read more about these stories in the Times Union. Kate Lisa reports for New York State of Politics that there are three bills in Albany now that legislators say will improve accountability and treatment of people held in state and local correctional sites in New York. One bill would give county officials unrestricted access to local jails for oversight. There are other proposals to increase the number of people on the State Commission of Correction and to make all jails and prisons subject to the state human rights law. Those two bills are currently in the Senate and Assembly committees. State Senator Robert Jackson is sponsoring the bill to allow county officials access to jails, and he said, quote, there's certain standards of operation, and all the standards should be one of transparency and accountability for staffing and whether or not the detainees and people incarcerated are being treated in an appropriate manner, unquote. Currently, state elected officials have access to New York prisons. Quote, if these local officials, local correctional and local jail administrators, have nothing to hide, there's no reason why they should object to access by government officials, unquote, said Assembly sponsor David Weperin. But some Republicans are arguing against the measure, such as Albany County legislator Mark Grimm, who said, quote, I want things to be fair in the jail, but that's why we have elections for sheriffs every 4 years, unquote. Legislators have 3 weeks to get these proposals to Governor Kathy Hochul's desk for her signature. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Patricia R. Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that the Hyde Park drive-in is not closing, and the National Park Service is currently considering several proposals to keep the outdoor theater operating for the next decade. The National Park Service has owned the drive-in since 2011, buying it because it is located on lands that were once part of the Franklin D. Roosevelt Farm and Estate. In that purchase, the National Park Service grandfathered the lease from Scenic Hudson, the previous owner, had with the existing drive-in operator. But that lease ended last year, and now a new operator is being sought. The Park Service is not saying when they will decide on which proposal to accept. The Hyde Park Drive-In opened in 1950 and can park up to 670 cars to watch a film. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, May 17th. Local early morning temperatures range from 43 degrees in Stephentown to 47 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 55 degrees. Pollen levels took a tiny dip but are still in high territory for today and tomorrow. A cool day is in store for us. Winds will be hard, lingering around 14 miles per hour all day, with gusts forming from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. If you feel your car getting tossed around at that time, check your tire tread to make sure it is sufficient. Storm season is building up. My projections are showing a mostly peaceful summer, but some experts are warning of the eventual southern oscillation reversal, bringing about El Nino, which, for us, should manifest as less devastating but more frequent storms and hurricanes. Today's high temperature of 59 degrees happens at 5 p.m. Mostly sunny skies keeping the wind from making it chilly. Overnight, frost warnings are up for the area. Protect those young and sensitive plants. Tomorrow, sunny, calm, cool, high of 66 at 5 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 44 degrees, bringing us to a comfortable Friday. Little cloudy, a bit windy with a high of 71. Saturday, rain finally shows up along with a high temperature of 67. That means Monday, everyone's lawn is going to explode. Plan to mow on Sunday if you want to deprive it of that growth. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 1:52 a.m., low at 8:30 a.m., high at 2:13 p.m., and low again at 8:37 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 63 degrees, and the tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 7:55 p.m., sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:29 a.m. Looking way up, we see things seem momentarily quiet as a new set of active sunspots are expected to rotate into view. X-class flare chances are at 5%. Plasma winds will be average at 434 kilometers per second with a thin density of 4 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 2 megahertz till dark, then fair below 14 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1.6. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 106. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to Stars and Stripes. Listen to Texas. Listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeples. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio WGXC.
Listen, thanks for doing this interview. I know it's not your typical style.
Absolutely.
Have you ever met a gay person before?
I deal better with regular people.
And we're live in 3, 2...
We are back, and joining me now is the worst thing to happen to Disney since the It's a Small World ride, and the most boring, Governor Ron DeSantis.
Welcome to the free state of Florida.
Okay, let's cut the shit. Governor, you go by so many nicknames. Which do you prefer I call you? Ron DeSanctimonious? Meatball Ron? Dull as dishwater DeSantis? Trump Light? Little Ronnie Pudding Fingers? Ronald McDoofus? I can continue.
You can call me whatever you want. I mean, just as long as you, you know, also call me a winner.
Girl, no. You have become quite a star, my friend, using your evil to turn back time and make your state an unsafe place for so many.
That's just what I do.
Well, I guess my question is, are you ready to do it on a national scale?
Absolutely.
Do you have what it takes, Governor, to snatch Donald Trump's $5 weave and steal the MAGA base?
I think the country wants a change. I think they want a fresh start and a new direction.
Ron DeSantis, has fame gone to your head and made you wacky? Fresh and new is yesterday's vibe. Who needs cultural advancement, diversity, compassion, or Trixie Mattel? This country's in a slow-burning Uber X headed right back to the dark ages. And baby, you're just the heartless autocratic wannabe to drive us there.
Hey, MAGA, y'all take note. He's the Trump alternative who wants your vote. Hey, Donald, get in line. There's a fresh new fascist trying to steal your shine. So let's go make liberal unlawful. Bid all drag shows and freedoms farewell. Say hello to a new kind of awful.
Hey, girl,
it's time to drag this country straight to hell. Hey, MAGA, welcome to DeSantis.
Could be your future, and it's awfully grim.
Here comes our hero of the culture war, and he's got his eye on 2024. Sorry, dude, take a token, start drinking. Look out for the most boring new right-wing creep, cause he's over that woke forward thinking. So he's come to put the country back to sleep.
And I go, welcome to DeSantis. Oh, 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 oh.
Books and we hate all the gays.
Brace yourself for major small dick energy,
cause it's time for a tyrant like Bonnie D.
Hide
your wife and children when DeSantis runs, cause our lives are secondary to their goddamn guns. Let's go retrogress to 1953, last call for all your bodily autonomy. Sit back, relax, and listen to him spin and spew his conservative view.
With the race, with the face, which is all they do.
Hey, Ronnie, full of hate. You're the Chevy Stalin of the Sunshine State. Nobody likes it cause you're harsh and mean. Even Mickey Mouse is like, well, f*** this queen. But say no, 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 immigration. Put an end to those pesky old human rights. Cause we know that a fight for our nation. Till at last it's every lovely Christian white.
Finally.
Hey, MAGA, welcome to DeSantis.
Oh, 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 oh.
I have fought the good fight.
No, no, no.
Oh, mama.
No, no, no.
Okay.
Okay, bring it on,
girl. No.
If you are hungry or just want to help community radio, come on out on Thursday, May 25th to Left Bank Ciders in Catskill to their community soup night. WGXC is organizing this night, Thursday, May 25th, with a live on-site broadcast, DJs, and soup. Come on out for a bowl of soup, conversation, and some music. Each Thursday night, Left Bank Ciders hosts a community soup night where volunteers make soup with proceeds benefiting a local nonprofit. All proceeds go to Waveform WGXC 90.7 FM. On Thursday, May 25th, the Left Bank Ciders in Catskill from 5 to 7 p.m.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
It is essential that Congress act as soon as possible. In my assessment, and that of economists across the board, a U.S. default would generate an economic and financial catastrophe.
At a meeting of the Independent Community Bankers of America, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen described the consequences of Congress not raising the debt ceiling. She noted millions of seniors who receive Social Security, veterans getting federal benefits, and federal employees going without critical income could lead to a recession. It's estimated if a debt ceiling increase isn't passed soon, the U.S. will default by June 1st. Meanwhile, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy reiterated calls for lowering government spending in meetings with the White House, adding conversations will continue despite House Republicans passing their own debt ceiling increase bill. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said both parties need to come together to pass an equitable bill.
Everyone agreed that default would be the worst outcome, a horrible situation for America and America's families. But we also agreed that we need to pass a bipartisan bill with bipartisan support in both chambers.
The Minnesota House of Representatives passed several new gun safety laws as part of a larger public safety bill. Some provisions include no-risk protection orders, a red flag law to allow firearms to be taken from those considered a danger to themselves or others, and expanded background checks. Maggie Emery with Protect Minnesota says there's no one-size-fits-all method to reduce gun violence, but feels the bill is a great starting point.
These bills represent the bottom line, common sense, should have been done years ago, things that Minnesota is behind on. And once we get these over the finish line, that's really going to open up an opportunity for us to think about what else could we be doing here that's going to be really effective in saving lives.
A Washington state bill would expand voting rights in the state. Opponents feel the bill is redundant and unnecessary. Tacoma Democrat Charlotte Mena, one of the bill's sponsors, says it's difficult to challenge possible discrimination in election systems under the state's original Voting Rights Act.
At a statewide level, I don't think we're where we need to be. And I think when we just look at voter turnout data or we look at areas that are majority people of color and we're not necessarily seeing the outcomes consistent with what those communities are in line with, we have more work to do.
Former executives from Silicon Valley and Signature Banks testified before the Senate Banking Committee. Greg Becker, Silicon Valley Bank's former CEO, said part of the reason for his bank's collapse was Silvergate Bank's demise and misinformation. He said a social media bank run caused more than $42 billion in deposits to be withdrawn in 10 hours. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you? You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Last month, the North Carolina Supreme Court reconsidered the case at the root of Moore v. Harper, overturning its own decision. Doing so may make Harper, now under consideration by the U.S. Supreme Court, moot. Last week, SCOTUS heard arguments for and against dismissing the case, intriguingly putting pro-democracy groups on both sides of the fence. The North Carolina legislature argues that the independent state legislature theory gives legislatures ultimate power over federal election rules, over the courts, and over a governor's veto. If the conservative majority of the U.S. Supreme Court should embrace the theory, its impact on voting, redistricting, and other election rules could be devastating to American democracy as we know it. In the original SCOTUS hearing last December, liberal justices were joined by some conservative colleagues in expressing skepticism about whether the Constitution granted this power. Then, only Justices Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas seemed supportive. SCOTUS blog reports that pro-democracy parties argued last week the case should be moot except for Democracy Advocate Common Cause. Likely betting on the justices' skepticism, it asked the High Court to go ahead and rule on the theory rather than waiting and considering another case, perhaps an emergency challenge which could disrupt an upcoming election. The court's decision may come between May 19th and early June. We have more on this consequential case at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Interesting, boring, really, really wonderful things.
It'd be about
chocolate pigs.
She's obsessed with pigs.
Chocolate pigs.
Awesome.
All the way down.
I turned it down.
Only dogs can hear.
I turned it down.
Did you hear that?
No.
If you would like to be on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM,
Now's your chance. Want to fulfill a long-time or newly emerging desire to be on the radio? Want to become part of the community conversations on Waveform's WGXC 90.7 FM radio for open ears? You have an idea for a short recurring segment? Tune into a Zoom meeting May 30th at 6 p.m. online. Contact content at WGXC.org to register and with any questions. But we would love as many voices as possible to be on the radio at WGXC, and this is your chance. We thought we would take a listen to what's going on in the community on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, where you can add your own event and hear it read on the radio and seen around the world at WGXC.org in the community calendar. Just click on add an event and add away. Fill in the blanks and you'll hear it soon. Wednesday, May 17th, you can make scented Play-Doh at the Hudson Area Library at 4 p.m. At 6:30 p.m., there's a Catskill Town Board meeting at the Catskill Town Hall. And those Catskill Town Board meetings are also web streamed at WGXC.org. Click on the listen button and scroll down to find the web stream. So turn out or tune in to the Catskill Town Board meeting Wednesday, May 17th at 6:30 p.m. Upstate Films is showing You Were My First Boyfriend at 7 p.m. Wednesday, May 17th, with filmmaker and Catskill farmer Cecilia Aldarando. Documentary from the 1990s. Abby Lappin is leading folks in Spring Movement and Music Storytime at the Hudson Area Library on Thursday, May 18th at 4 p.m. State Senator Michelle Hinchey has a Let's Talk About Ticks virtual event Thursday, May 18th at 6 p.m. Go to the WGXC community calendar to find out how you can log in and hear panelists from Catskill Mountain Keeper, the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies, Cornell Cooperative Extension of Ulster County, and more. There's a question and answer session during the event, so if you have a question about ticks, Thursday, May 18th at 6 p.m., tune into that. Saturday, May 20th, the Christ Church Episcopal Parish Hall in Hudson has a spring affair from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. with a sale of baked goods, homemade soups, jewelry, toys, plants, knickknacks, and more. Also Saturday, May 20th, Oakdale Rewilding is going on, a volunteer day at Oakdale Park in Hudson to plant native trees along the Oakdale Trail. That's from 10 a.m. to 12:30. There's also a spring wildflower walk Saturday, May 20th at the Eldridge Research Center in Rensselaerville at 10 a.m. Claverack resident Eric Frazier is a renowned bansuri player, kind of wooden flute. He's performing with some friends at 3 p.m. Saturday, May 20th at the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson. That's 369 Warren Street, just above the WGXC Hudson studio. There's also a classical ensemble led by Ghent resident Gilly Melamed-Lev, 4 to 6 p.m. at the Tideman Farm in Germantown, Saturday, May 20th. The traditional Irish music session is at the Shamrock House, Sunday, May 21st from 2 to 5 p.m. It's an open Irish jam every Sunday there. And 26-year-old Catskill resident Rachel Wagman is singing with Michael Clement from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Temple Israel of Catskill, Sunday, May 21st. Patricia Guerrero is performing 4 p.m. Sunday, May 21st at PS 21 in Chatham. And at 7 p.m. Sunday, May 21st, The End Is Not What I Thought It Would Be is showing. It's the upstate premiere of Andrea Klein's film, plus a post-screening question and answer with Andrea Klein from Columbia County. She's a filmmaker, composer, and more. All these events and many, many more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org. Go there to find out your own and add your own event if you didn't hear it here.
Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on, hold on. With a grip so tight it dams my blood, makes my head feel light. Well, hearts will start and hearts will stop, and the blood will flow until we drop. Blood flow. Blood flow. Oh, oh, oh. Blood flow. Blood flow. Oh, oh, oh. No time for tete-a-tete. Can I borrow your machete? In this wonderful world, in this beautiful world, hold on. Spill and blood will spurt, enemies keep the mind alert. A blood flow. Blood flow. Oh, oh, oh. Blood flow. Blood flow.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Beyond the 15-minute city, making small cities walkable is the upcoming event at Future of Small Cities Institute. To tell us more, we're now joined again by the Institute's founder, Rafe Larson. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
When did our cities change from focusing on city centers to being designed around cars?
Yeah, well, this was all entangled in the last century where we turned our cities into massive suburbs and encouraged people to live in single family homes outside of the urban centers, and thus privileged parking lots and getting in and out of the city quickly. And there were a lot of knock-on effects on equity, on housing, but particularly on how we move around cities. And streets became primarily places where people can park automobiles, private automobiles. And often in small cities, that meant for free and very close to where they were going to. So, you know, we're now very used to seeing a street lined with automobiles on both sides, although we got a brief respite from that during COVID, which was a really interesting sort of window into the possibilities of what a street could be without all these big hulking pieces of metal around. And I think, you know, particularly to small cities, which are often located in counties that are either rural or large, you have these sort of pockets of density that are surrounded by heavy car culture, right? So one of the challenges becomes how do you encourage or cultivate walkability and sort of all the amenities of walkability when most of your people who are coming into the city are driving from, you know, they have to drive, right? And they're going to want to park their car somewhere. So how do you kind of balance that, I think, is one of the questions that cities like Troy and Albany and Schenectady are facing.
How will this upcoming talk discuss the redesign of the center into the 15-minute walkable model? And also, what does the 15-minute walkable model mean, 15 minutes from end to end?
Yeah, so it's really interesting what's happened with this this model of the 15-minute city. It's been in urban planning for a while now, but it's the idea that one should be able to, within 15 minutes, walk to all of the amenities and necessities that you need for life, right? So grocery store, you know, bookstore, any sort of shopping you need, perhaps your doctor, things like that, which is just not the reality for most Americans, I would say. But this being a sort of a goal for the creating the sort of density and accessibility that urban planners, you know, strive for. It became very controversial recently in the UK and also in the US, and got attacked particularly from, I would say, conservatives on the right as, and I think it's an interesting insight into where we are, right, politically, you know, in the spectrum, where the 15-minute city was seen as this kind of micromanagement of our lives, right, that they want to design our lives and like encapsulate us and cause us to not go anywhere outside of our neighborhood. You know, they're seen as this sort of dictatorial sort of big brother kind of situation that roiled libertarians who said, I want to jump in my car and be able to go wherever I want, which is exactly what it's not about. It's right. It's an equity question. And it's also a climate question. And I think that's the thing that we're also wanting to hit on in this is that when we're talking about sustainable cities, we're often thinking about big tech solutions, right? Troy is proposing this amazing district geothermal loop and it's downtown. You know, we're talking about LEDs, we're talking about solar power and EVs. But at its heart, I think we also have to think about how we move around. And if we simply replace all of our cars with EVs, that's not going to solve the climate solution, right? The climate crisis. It has to be that we have to bring things closer to us. We have to use our feet. We have to use bicycles. These are the lowest carbon. They don't require batteries, right? They don't require rare earth metals. They require us, you know. So I think balancing these kind of, you know, big ticket tech solutions that decarbonize cities with lo-fi solutions, like put things within walking distance of people, right? Give them good food to eat that is close by so they don't have to drive, you know, 10, 15 miles to a grocery store. So any sort of, I think, urban sustainable solution is going to have a mixture of these technological solutions, but also proximity and common sense solutions.
So we were talking mostly about walkability, but your upcoming talk also addresses accessibility. What are some of the important infrastructure needs that need to be considered for different mobility and other accessibility needs?
Yeah, this is a really good, and it's also an emerging kind of hot topic right now. From a, just a basic infrastructure, sidewalks are a mess right now in all cities, and they require sort of constant mending. They're also on lowly on the totem poles of priorities for cities, which tend to prioritize roads and streets, right? But just uneven sidewalks are really dangerous. Like we saw someone actually on Saturday during our performance at the Focus Lab trip and hit his head because the sidewalk was uneven. And it's costly to maintain sidewalks, but for people in wheelchairs who need to get around, this can be really like prevent them from actually going to places of business. Simple unevenness of sidewalks. But beyond that, I think again, it's like a sidewalk that is wide enough for someone to walk beside someone in a wheelchair, and also have room for canopy trees. All these questions, you can see very quickly that cities are not privileged for that kind of interaction and that kind of accessibility. And it would really require, I think, probably to make sidewalks accessible and wide enough, you're going to have to get rid of a line of cars that are parked, right? Keep one, but maybe not have two. And then that brings up all kinds of questions of like, where do we park our cars? The question of parking is deeply entangled with the question of accessibility and walkability. And almost every new development question is first led with, well, where is the parking going to go? You know, and Troy just passed a new zoning law, which as part of it changed the parking requirements for businesses, as well as encouraged mixed use buildings. A lot of cities have parking requirements that are based on basically suburban code, as if there were infinite parking spaces. So they're really ridiculous. For like every business, you need, you know, 20, 30 parking spaces, which when you're trying to create or maintain or nurture a main street, it's just not practical. So finally, cities are coming around to redoing their zoning code, redoing their parking requirements for residential and businesses. And it's a start, you know, we're kind of training ourselves to think beyond the parked car.
You have a couple panelists joining you for this event. Who are these panelists? Can you give us a little bit of information about what's taking place on May 25th at 6 p.m.?
Yes, absolutely. So Lindsay Zefting's an engineer, and she's done a lot of work with complete streets up and down the Hudson Valley. So she's very in tune with, from an engineering and infrastructure standpoint, you know, what do we need to do? And I think she's also looked at some of the economic development questions, because that's a big case for walkability, that if you encourage walkability, there's real room for economic growth in these downtowns. James Roth recently founded Capital Streets, which had their launch at the Focus Lab. And I think this is a walkable, rideable advocacy organization, which is trying to bring together a number of different groups around the Capital Region and coalesce the kind of urgency and the movements, because there's a lot of people who are interested in improving bike routes and co-connecting and creating pathways across the region. And then finally, Jackie Gonzalez, she works for Walkable Albany, and she has an amazing perspective on, you know, in a city like Albany, which again has its share of challenges of walkability. But I think Albany, like many cities, has this phenomenon where during the day, it's something swells to like 80,000 people, right? As all the people who are working in the State House, and then all these people go to the suburbs. So if we even just relocated a fifth of those people to be within walking distance of the State House, it would completely change the carbon footprint of Albany. So that's the kind of mindset that we have to get into, and it really does require a cultural shift. So all three panelists are going to offer tremendous insight into what it would take to make our cities truly walkable, accessible, and rideable. And I think we're going to learn a lot.
We are just about out of time. We have about 30 seconds left. But you did mention the reprieve from the cars along the streets during COVID. And would you be able to give, what are some of the lasting impressions from that time that are being integrated into small city redesign?
Yeah, well, I think the most obvious one is outdoor dining, right? So you're seeing now at least more seasonal or semi-permanent reopening of streets to outdoor dining, particularly during the summer. So Troy has that on certain blocks. I think you're seeing more street festivals, pocket parks happening, more flexibility, again, around zoning. And I think we're just aware of the street as a potential area of experimentation, and it's not like the story isn't out on streets as simply a parking lot, right? We can do things with them, and there are a huge amount of real estate, particularly in downtowns. And as we privileged our downtowns more and more as valuable spaces, as spaces of social meaning and interaction, I think it's just reprogramming them to be human spaces. Like somehow along the way, we lost that plot that downtowns and cities are supposed to be designed for humans. They should be on a human scale, right? We fell in love with the automobile, and I think COVID and the pandemic knocked us out of this briefly, but it recast our thinking, and I think that's a good thing. I think what we need to do is rethink almost every square foot of our downtowns, of our cities, even of our threshold spaces between downtowns and other neighborhoods, and think, what should we do with this space? And our guiding light should be around people and human size and how we interact and how we socialize. And I think if we use that as our guiding star, things will change, and we'll think quite differently about the spaces that we live in.
Thank you so much for joining us, Rafe Larson.
Thank you.
Foraged Fest is coming to Troy for its second year, and this year the festival will take place in Albany. The founder and director, Nadine Medina, joins us now to tell us more. Welcome to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Well, thanks for having me. Hi.
So what exactly is involved in foraging, and how did you begin foraging?
Starting right with a big question. So what's involved in foraging? A lot of patience and a curiosity, of course, and definitely a lot of research. When I first started foraging, it was with a very simple item, and that was with dandelions. And that was really my intro to foraging, because we all can identify dandelions. A lot of us know what they look like, and once you know that they're edible, you become a little more comfortable with the idea of it. I started foraging probably, I would say at this point, maybe 12 years ago, and I knew maybe like two things that were edible. I'm up to like 25 now, so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Actually, I just found one for the first time right before I got on the show today. So it was very exciting.
And is the way that you learned very much like what the festival is like community and like just expanding your vocabulary like one by one?
Yes. Yeah, that's a great question. Definitely like every year just getting interested or hearing something about maybe one or two more plants. And this was actually like I think pre-Instagram days when I started foraging. So it was looking stuff up online and finding other foragers. Wildman Steve Brill was actually the first forager I had heard of. And he had gotten arrested in New York City years ago for picking dandelions because he wasn't allowed to. And thus began his like foraging career publicly. So he had some books out, and he actually had an app at the time that I used. And so I got familiar with one plant at a time.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that a little more about like, it's, you can't forage in cities and just like the classism in that, in how like it's accessible to everybody. It's in your backyard and it's illegal?
So he was foraging in Central Park, I believe is the story. And so in some parks, and this is actually something like foragers who have Instagram accounts will remind you, like Chaotic Foragers, one I love to follow, and it is know the laws in your particular municipality, because in Central Park, at least at the time, this was I think in the 80s, at the time, it was illegal to take anything out of the park. So even though he was harvesting dandelions, he did actually get arrested for doing so, although he got the news involved and like the next day, you know, things changed. But I agree with you. I mean, this is like, we're talking about not just eating interesting food. We're talking about food accessibility and food sustainability and the right of all people to have food, especially on the land, especially food that most other people are considering weeds and are going to spray and don't want present anyway. So it is important to know your laws, but I do see the issues that you just brought up for sure.
So one common fear of foraging is that one might misidentify a plant.
Mm-hmm.
One of the events is poisonous plants. What will this tour cover?
Okay, that's a great question. We actually have a tour specifically called Poisonous Plants. So the festival itself does have tours as part of the festival, and you can go to particularly themed tours. But one of the things that I like to tell people is if you're curious, you can start with something like a dandelion. You can move into something like a garlic mustard, for example, which is an invasive species, and it's literally everywhere. And you know it's garlic mustard because when you mash up the leaves, it smells like a garlicky mustard, and it's very identifiable. So I tell people you really need to start with one plant at a time. I use an app. Can I say the app that I use?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. So I use this app called Picture This. It's a wonderful app. I take it into the woods with me, especially as I'm still learning, and I snap a photo if I'm kind of sure that I know what it is, and then it'll tell me what it is, and then I go look online, and then with Sean Rao being one of my foraging partners, I will sometimes also then text him a photo of the thing. So, like, I'm checking a lot, but we will give all of that information to people and make foraging super easy. And you'll even know when you're going to a particular restaurant involved in the festival, the items that we have given to them that they're using on their menus this week.
And you were telling us mm-hmm. just before that a really big component to the festival is the partnerships with mm-hmm. restaurants. And not everybody who wants to participate in foraging needs to actually go out and do the foraging. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's honestly one of the more exciting parts to me because I've definitely been trying to get all my friends to try stuff that I've pulled out of like their yards, and not everyone is super keen on that idea. However, what we've done is we've partnered with 14 bars, restaurants, and cafes in Troy and Albany this year. And those bars, restaurants, and cafes during the week of forage, which is the 14th to the 21st, are committing to serve food, drink, and snacks using the items we forage. So if you do not want to go foraging, but you're, we call it foraging curious, you can go to any of these restaurants and you can go, well, I know that Old English has nettle and I've heard about nettle and I like to try it. It's a really great way to go somewhere that you know is being responsible with their food and they're doing things the proper way and they've been educated to try those things in a very like no-risk way.
Mm. So mm-hmm. nettles, I've heard of nettle pesto and nettle tea.
Yeah.
What are some of the other plants, and maybe if we have a little bit of time, mm-hmm. maybe a recipe that you can suggest?
Yeah, definitely. So James Rocket is one that we collect. It's an invasive species. I was just in the woods literally right before getting on the show collecting several bags of James Rocket for a couple of the restaurants. It's also known as wild spinach. It has an incredibly high nutrition value, which is amazing. And because it's invasive, you don't have to worry about sustainably harvesting it. You can literally take as much as you want. So that's a great one. Another one that I really like, is Canadian nettle, which is a little more rare than stinging nettle. That's delicious. Japanese knotweed, another invasive species, tastes like a rhubarb mixed with a green apple, depending on the time of its life that you're getting it. And you can make compotes and simple syrups and all that. So
I think I need a good recipe. I've tried knotweed.
Yeah.
I think I need to try it again.
I know. It's that one's a little hit or miss for me too, to be honest with you. Just because I forage them all doesn't mean that I love the flavor of everything. Yeah.
Gabe, have you ever had any foraged food? Does any of this resonate with you?
I'm not sure if I've ever had foraged food.
You've had mushrooms.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I never thought about it before.
Oh, what's the question that you have as a non-forager?
There are so many delicious edible weeds in our backyards. And what are some things people might find in their yard?
Yeah, garlic mustard, 100%. I say 100%. Now watch several people not find it in their yards, but it's incredibly invasive. I was just at a birthday party at a friend's house, looked out back and saw garlic mustard and literally took the children of the party out foraging. Mm-hmm. So I would say garlic mustard. Obviously, dandelions are another one. Sometimes depending on where you live, I had Japanese knotweed in my yard. But again, as you said, it's kind of hit or miss.
I think the right recipe, right?
Yeah, the right recipe. So actually, if you're interested in trying it again, Nine Pin Cider is making Japanese knotweed salsa, kind of like a fruit salsa. So I'm excited to try
it. I could see that working because it does have like a bit of a fruity, you're not quite sure what direction it's going to take. Fruity, earthy kind of.
Exactly. Yeah. Sorrel is another one that people will find in their yards. It kind of looks a little like clover. It's a lot of fun because it's got a lemony flavor. And if you accidentally taste clover, you're going to be fine too. So that's a low risk one.
And chickweed? I love chickweed at this time because it's like pea weed, like peas.
Yep, you're right. Chickweed is a really common one that's in people's yards as well. There's also water chickweed, which is a little more elusive that you'll find near the water. But chickweed is a great one to add. Purslane, that's going to be more in June. 100% recommend people eating as much of it as possible.
Exciting.
It's so delicious.
Yeah. And this is starting on Sunday, going throughout the whole week. We're hoping to maybe get another foraging segment before the festival's over, but we're running out of time. So where's the best way to find more information about the events, about the participating restaurants, etc.?
Yeah.
I was going to ask about the restaurants.
Yeah. So definitely. So foraged with a D at the end, foragednewyork.org. There's a list of all the restaurants as well as links to the partners for Forage, which is Sean Rao and Collar City Mushrooms, Avery and Amy. And also on Instagram, it's foraged.ny. And so we're posting about all the restaurants as well as what we've delivered, especially on the Instagram page. So I highly recommend that because there's some behind the scenes stuff there too. That's a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Nadine Medina, for joining us on Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, both of you. Appreciate it, yeah.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Next on WGXC, we hear from David Grubbs and Riley Walker from their 2021 album, A Tap on the Shoulder. This is The Madman from Massachusetts.